You're listening to The Political Fix, the show that investigates a political solution combining the best of the left and the right. Hosted by business and political expert Jay Amernick, political visionary and entrepreneur Rick Raddatz, and me, journalist in all media Heather Vale, The Political Fix reveals the answers we're all looking for. Get on board and get your fix. Streaming live Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern at politicalfixradio.com. And welcome to The Political Fix for Wednesday, July 23rd. I'm Heather Vale, and I'm here with my co-hosts Jay Amernick and Rick Raddatz. Jay Amernick is a strategic planner helping his clients create and implement plans, goals, tactics, and benchmarks. And he's also the bridge in Nevada for Israeli companies who want to expand their business into the U.S. Rick Raddatz is a serial entrepreneur and an internet marketer with a degree in philosophy. His political development is called The Solution, which is to cap and prioritize. I'm Heather Vale, known as The Unwrapper. I'm a freelance interviewer and journalist. Hey, guys, welcome to the show today.
Hey, how are you?
Hello.
I'm doing good. So we noticed that Rick has a different background. He's in some kind of different location. What's the deal there, Rick?
I'm on vacation, so this is my new headquarters here in my mom's sewing room.
Very nice. And how about you, Jay? How's your week going?
It's actually going very good. I've been taking it easy after sort of what has been a sort of very busy 4 days, starting with last Thursday, moving into Sunday. So Monday and Tuesday, I actually got some work done, which I'm very happy about. I know, not exciting. I'm sorry, but that's what's been happening.
Right. Okay. But getting work done is actually necessary. So exciting or not, yeah. You know, it needs to get done.
Yeah. Well, I was getting stuff done on Thursday, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, but.
You were getting stuff done.
And getting
but
rested.
Not work. And
no,
getting
no,
arrested.
No, no, no.
Getting arrested?
No, getting well rested.
Oh, okay.
This weekend I was not well rested.
Okay. Yeah.
Too
okay.
Much going on here.
Too many parties, right?
Yeah, and just stuff to do, yeah.
Stuff to do, yeah. Random stuff in Vegas. Yeah, that could be anything. And Rick, what do you have to do where you are in that undisclosed location?
Well, we went on a river tour yesterday with the family. We canoed for like 3 hours. And I saw some more relatives. And tomorrow's the zoo. So it's a typical family vacation here.
Yeah, sounds fun. Cool. All right, so before we dive into the show, Rick, let's talk a little bit about the solution. I said it's to cap and prioritize, but of course that means nothing to anybody who hasn't heard those terms before. So can you kind of explain to us what we're talking about?
The idea is really simple. Okay, we have this left-right political divide in our country, and you know, there's a lot of different issues that come into play here. But one of the biggest issues is about financing our government and how we use that money. So what the solution is it's called cap and prioritize, where we cap the government, cap government spending, just like the political right would love. And normally that would make the political left or political moderates a little bit uneasy or unhappy. But that's where the prioritizing idea comes in, which is to say, look, you know, we got to be sustainable, so we need some kind of cap to guarantee that. But then within that cap, let's also prioritize spending more transparently, meaning actually prioritize the budget, rank it from top to bottom so all the most important spending is on top and all the waste, fraud, and abuse is exposed on the bottom. And there are ways to do this. And if we cap and prioritize, what happens is the people who need help most win the priority battle because of the transparency of a prioritized budget, and the ideas that help them the most win. And in year one, this won't change much of anything because we're just kind of reordering things, but as time goes by, better and better ideas win the priority fight, and that's where we start to see constant improvement in government's ability to help people, even within conservative, even perhaps libertarian-style limits on government. So, excuse me, this is a way of uniting the values of the right and left at the same time. So it's called cap and prioritize.
Okay. I have to say that hearing you on that old-school, old-fashioned, corded landline phone in the middle of nowhere, you sound better than you have on any show yet.
Oh, really?
Like,
okay.
that old well, technology it, blows away
it is
everything
the old technology,
newfangled.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, at home I have a voice over IP line, like most people do these days, or more and more people have, and which is basically an internet technology, and it doesn't always sound as good. This is the old school.
Yeah, and it's funny because people will argue and say, oh, that technology that you're talking on right now, it's the same technology that's been around since the 40s. It's old, it's no good, but, well, it works. That's all I got to say.
Yep. So, okay.
Yeah. All right, so do you guys want to hear the top story today?
Yes.
Yeah.
Please.
All right. So
I was
going to
say no, but what would happen?
We're focusing on local stories today. So this is... New York story, comes out of New York, and this is about the current state of our youth. Experimentation with human growth hormones by America's teens more than doubled in the past year as more young people look to drugs to boost their athletic performance and to improve their looks, according to a new large-scale national survey. It was a confidential 2013 survey of over 3,700 high school students, which is being released today by the Partnership for Drug-Free Kids. 11% of kids reported using synthetic HGH at least once, and that's up from about 5% in the four preceding annual surveys. Teen use of steroids increased from 5% to 7% over the same period. Travis Tygart, the CEO of the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency, said the numbers are alarming but not surprising because there is extensive online marketing of performance-enhancing substances, and there's practically no drug testing for high school athletes whatsoever. The new survey noted that the upsurge in teen HGH use occurred even though famous athletes have recently been caught up in high-profile doping cases. Like last August, Alex Rodriguez got a lengthy suspension from Major League Baseball, and a few months earlier, Lance Armstrong admitted to doping throughout his cycling career. Synthetic HGH is supposed to be available only by prescription, but products claiming to contain it are widely promoted, and the regulations are only inconsistently enforced. As far as side effects, the Mayo Clinic says possible hazards and side effects of HGH use include stunted growth, acne, liver problems, and a few things that I didn't want to mention on the air. Warning signs of the drug's use include increased aggressiveness, rapid weight gain, and needle marks in the buttocks or thighs. So there you have it, guys. That's the state of our teens today. What do you think, Jay? Anything to say?
Yeah, I mean it's the downside to the mass media and everybody kind of getting their 15 minutes as it were. You know, everybody's much more public now than they were even 10 years ago.
Let's blame social media partially for that.
Well, okay, yeah, well that's part of mass media. Literally anybody could Google anybody. You know, you can Google me and find pictures of me.
Of course.
Some of them, not the most flattering. I mean, nothing, damaging or embarrassing, but just, So I think people are much more conscious, especially kids. I don't condone this. I think it's a terrible thing. I think people need to be much more happy with who they are, and learn that there's really nothing wrong with the way any of us look. It's all media image. People want to be more like, the people they see on TV and in the movies, because they're actually much more real, given all the B-roll and everything like that. And you see them walking around, and there are people who've like made one movie, but there's more footage of them, shopping at the grocery store than there is of them actually working. So they become like sort of more real people. And regular people want to try to live up to that, so they do all these things.
But you would think if we show them shopping at the grocery store and being real, that should just say, okay, look, they're normal too. They have their ugly days too. I mean,
no, but they usually look really good though. That's the thing. Very rare, unless it's somebody like the paparazzi hate. Are you going to get like the really bad mugshot or
Yeah, and we don't know how much photos are retouched as well. Like,
Well, right.
It's notorious. So.
Yeah. And, right. Like, you know, someone like Paris Hilton probably doesn't leave the house without, a full-on session with her stylist.
Yeah.
Because she's going to get her picture taken, and she wants to look, you know, as good as she possibly can.
Yeah.
And people think that she did that herself, and look, she's, you know, this is what she looks like going to the grocery store, and meanwhile, you know, everybody else is
meanwhile,
in shorts
it took
and a t-shirt.
It took her 2 hours and 5 staff members to do it.
Well, of course. But that's, but again, that's part of her business.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what people don't realize.
It's that's not, her brand.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So she's got to be very conscious of that. So it's not, I don't begrudge her for doing that. But that's, you know.
Yeah.
But I think it's a shame. I think it's a shame these kids are doing so much potential damage to themselves really for nothing.
Yeah. What about you, Rick? What are your thoughts?
Well, I'm going to tie this into our federal budget.
Okay, let's
somehow.
Do that.
Okay. Here's how. If we put this issue into historical context, you know, when our nation was founded, there weren't performance-enhancing drugs even available, unless you count maybe tobacco. But also times were very hard. You'd go to prison if you owed money. Okay. You had to be disciplined in your life. And you had to work hard, you had to contribute, and there wasn't a lot of opportunity. I'm sure there were temptations that were around even then. Back in the Bible times, there were temptations. And so there's always temptations of one kind or another, but we didn't really enter an era of true abundance like we know it today until maybe the last century or so. And so government spending going out of control, people going out of control, you know, this is all a question of temptation and abundance. And now that life is a lot easier, you know, we as individuals, in a way, have more responsibility than ever before, and we're not always living up to it. But also we as a society have more responsibility than ever before, and as a society, we're not living up to it. And so it really, it's a lot of the same problem. You know, we as individuals, we have to cap and prioritize ourselves. We have to limit ourselves in what we choose to do. And it's up to us to do it, ultimately. But also we as a society have the same responsibility. So for people who, you know, look at someone and say, why can't this person, you know, make wise decisions? Well, why can't we as a nation make wise decisions? It's really the same problem. It's just that, it's kind of a different context or different level of problem. And the solution is the same. The solution is self-discipline. So in the past, we didn't have to, fight for self-discipline. It was thrust upon us. We were either self-disciplined or we really suffered, clearly, instantly. Nowadays, we have to choose self-discipline, and this is the challenge of our generation, perhaps, our century.
Okay, but self-discipline typically is very difficult for teenagers to have, regardless of the era. Mm-hmm.
I don't know about regardless of the era. I think, maybe teens have it tougher than adults, if only because the teens are, for the first time, experiencing, kind of the power that an adult has without all the responsibility. But back in the day, you were helping the farm at 13, if not sooner, in some capacity. So, my wife has some friends who, the father apparently got tired of all the complaining. And quit his job, bought a peach orchard, and turned the whole family into farmers. Put them to work, and apparently they grew up to be amazing kids. So, I don't know all the details, but that's the top line story. So, my main point here is that this is a problem of abundance, because we have so many choices now, and we can do so many things. We have to choose self-discipline. And that includes we as individuals, but also as a nation. And here's some good news looking forward. As soon as we as a nation get serious about self-discipline and we choose to cap our government properly and then prioritize within that cap, the government itself will stop feeding the problem, because under a capped and prioritized budget, the money the government has to help people will only go to people who need help most and only to ideas that help them the most. And they won't just be throwing money at people forever. It'll be, for a time, we're going to help you this way, and then and give you the right education, right clothing, right health care, and so on. for a time, and then we expect you to be on your own at some point. And so that's about teaching people personal responsibility and then letting them, you know, thrive or struggle based on their actual decisions. And so under a capped and prioritized government, society will, in a way, return to an era where personal responsibility is the theory of the day, you know, is the way we live our lives. And some of these problems will start to fade away or be a little bit easier to solve because, the society will change.
Okay. So you're saying if we cap and prioritize, then that's going to trickle down and eventually teens will learn self-discipline?
Yep, it won't magically do it, but it'll be one of the elements that helps out. Instead of government rewarding bad behavior, government will start rewarding good behavior, and that will make a big difference.
Okay, that is definitely true. I just think that inherently teenagers are going through that period where it's almost like in order to become responsible adults, we need to have a little bit of experimentation somewhere along the way. And I'm not saying with drugs necessarily, but kids need to press the boundaries a little bit. They need to figure out what they can do, what they can't do, what they get in trouble for, what they don't get in trouble for, what the repercussions are of certain actions. And if they don't do that learning and development during the teen years, then typically they end up doing it later. Now, some people do it during the teen years and never stop, and that's another whole issue. But I would rather see teens experimenting a little bit with what the boundaries are in life and learning at an early age than to see them self-destructing later on.
Yeah, well, you know, this is one of the things that it's always going to be fighting against is that kids at a certain age think they're literally invincible.
Yeah.
and there's really, I can't imagine that changes. I mean, you can go back to the 1950s and kids drag racing. You know, I think about what I did when I was a teenager. I mean, it's a miracle I sit here today. And I also think there's a little bit of, blame to be placed on the parents because there's this kind of attitude. It doesn't seem like a lot of parents are interested in raising good kids. They're more interested in raising cool kids because they themselves want to be cool. And I think I see a lot of that. I'm not saying it's an across-the-board thing, but I see a lot of that.
I see a lot of that with the younger kids, like the 5-year-olds, the 7-year-olds, the 10-year-olds. And, you know, they're running wild in a store or something, and the parent will be saying, "I told you not to do that," but not actually doing anything to stop it, just letting them continue doing it. And that right there is saying, there are no boundaries. Do whatever you want. You'll be told, but you'll be still allowed to do it, and nothing will happen. So, I mean, that right there is setting the precedent for go ahead and experiment with whatever you want.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I agree with that. So let's take a break now, and when we come back, we can wrap up any discussion on this, any further points, and then we'll hear the inside perspective with Jay Emmernick. So we'll be right back on The Political Fix. Top story, which is increased use of human growth hormones by Americans' teenagers. And we were talking about various things around teenagers having self-discipline and the country as a whole having self-discipline, which Rick says can be achieved by capping and prioritizing. So, guys, do you have anything final to say on that discussion before we move on?
Nope. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
I just lost you.
No, we hear you.
Oh, there you go. Okay. I can hear you now.
All right.
So what was the question?
Do you have anything to add to the discussion about teenagers, self-discipline, drug use, whatever, before we move on to Jay's inside perspective?
Well, no, I think we covered it, that, we're in an age of abundance. Individuals have to be more responsible. I agree with you guys that teens as a whole have it harder. And I agree that parenting, each generation seems to be a little bit more removed from the parenting role in different ways. One of the best sources of information for parenting, by the way, I believe, is called Love and Logic. And actually, it's a lot like cap and prioritize, only it's reversed. The logic is the cap, and then the love is what comes from prioritizing. And actually, a lot of the parenting advice that you can find in the Love and Logic catalog, in a way, helped inspire the cap and prioritize model. So I strongly encourage anyone who likes the cap and prioritize idea to go, if you have kids or grandkids or whatever, you know, go check out loveandlogic.com. And I have no relationship with that company, but it's just it's a good good source of information for parents.
Cool. All right. Well, earlier Jay was saying that he had several choices for his Inside Perspective segment this week, and he was going to pick and choose based on what the top story was. But apparently he's going to be a rebel today and pick something that is totally irrelevant. Is that what you're saying, Jay?
Not totally irrelevant. It's actually something.
I think that's what I heard him say.
That's what I heard him say. Go ahead.
It's actually something we touched on a little bit last week.
Okay.
And it is... It is political parties as religion. Now, I will say small r religion. They're not worshiping a deity or anything like that. But they have bought into this ideology on either the left or the right. And when their guy is in office, it doesn't matter what that individual does. They stand behind them. A great example, and inversely, the party opposite will decry them. A great example would be President Obama assassinating Osama bin Laden. The Democrats were thrilled with it, and the Republicans, you know, were very upset with it for some reason. That the Republicans were incredibly upset over all of a sudden the sovereignty of Pakistan. Which makes no sense. Inversely, the Democrats bashed George Bush when gas prices went over $2 a gallon. Now that gas is over $4 a gallon, the Democrats are saying nothing about gas prices and the ability of the president to stop it. So it's a weird thing. Another thing, when George Bush was in office, the issue of gay marriage came up quite a bit. But when Bill Clinton, a Democrat, signed into law DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act, nobody said boo. And I can give you a ton of examples of presidents ruling from the center, and making smart, reasoned decisions, and then the party opposite railing against them. But when their guy's in office, they don't do it, and then the other party rails against what their guy did. And it happens all the time.
Okay.
It's going to continue to happen more and more because of the way we get information.
So, you use the word weird, and this is boggling my mind. You said that when Osama bin Laden was killed,
yes,
the Republicans did not like it?
They were not happy with the way that he went after them. They criticized him violating Pakistan's sovereign borders, which all of a sudden they care about, which is nonsense because Pakistan could be considered sort of not quite an ally.
Okay, usually it's the Democrats that don't like someone being killed,
exactly.
And it's the Republicans who say yes, kill.
That's my point exactly. In this case, since it was a Democrat doing the killing, the Democrats were behind it. They forget ideology, and that's why the party itself becomes this weird, like, cult-like thing. And sometimes you have people jump ship, and usually, it's funny, you'll see it on the news, there'll be some, stalwart Democrat that disagrees with President Obama, and all the Republicans get all excited, and it turns out it's because the guy's upset because President Obama's not left-wing enough for him. It's like a Bernie Sanders or a Dennis Kucinich or one of these guys. And it also happens on the right. Ron Paul, jumped ship on George W. Bush on many occasions. And so that is what we're dealing with. Is this attitude of parties, people in the parties just going with whatever their guy says, regardless of whether it's part of the ideology or the initial plank.
Okay. So, Rick, what are your thoughts on Jay's segment today? You're going to disagree.
Well, I agree with him that it happens. I disagree, I think, on that one example of Osama bin Laden, because I don't remember the political right being upset with Pakistan's borders being violated. I remember the political right being upset of the way Obama characterized the effort, like, I have killed, Osama bin Laden. He kind of took more credit than he earned. And I think better presence, left or right, do a lot of effort to make sure that other people get the credit, because they know that they're going to get kind of credit for it anyway. So let's give the SEAL the credit, or this team the credit, or whatever. But in general, my response to Jay's commentary there is I am shocked that there is politics going on in politics. I mean, like, of course people on the left or right are going to do this. Of course. And so I guess my point is, let's stop worrying about it. Of course it's going to happen, okay? And then ignore all of that. It really, what I think the lesson is from late, because I agree largely with Jay's point, that it's going to happen more because of the way the media is working these days, the way we're getting our information. So I agree with that point. But then what do we do about it? So I guess my response to Jay is, I think what we do about it is ignore it largely. We let people go nuts on the left and right, and we can ignore all of that. We know it's all a reaction. It's all part of the game. Ignore it, and then ask a simple question: what's the solution? Okay, and to be real clear, there's always a short-term thing you got to do just to get through life as a country or as a person, and so let's do that short-term thing, whatever it is. Don't worry about principles too much there. Just do what you need to survive. Principles are a luxury item. And then in the long term, though, all we think about is principles. We focus on what's the long-term solution to this, and the answer is to cap and prioritize government spending so we can achieve both freedom and social justice at the same time, cap and prioritize. And then that will take a lot of the energy out of these politics. And that's when we're going to see all of this emotion, all this drama, go down a little bit, because we'll be fighting about something else, and that something else will be a smaller issue. If you think about the history of our country, we were fighting for our own independence, then we're fighting for the freedom of the slaves, and then finally women got the right to vote, and now we're talking about how we spend our budget to help people more. Okay, so the problems we're fighting about are actually getting less and less important. We're still getting worked up about them, but they're getting less and less important over time as we solve them, and we will solve these problems, and then we will fight about something even less important, as long as we don't blow ourselves up first.
Yeah, well, I just to sort of defend my point, the Republicans, it was mainly, I don't know that they ever went, like, made a full big deal out of it, but It was the buzz on Capitol Hill that their criticism was that he had violated Pakistan's sovereign border.
So, yeah, that's probably
well.
The,
I mean, that may be true because Republicans do pride themselves on sovereignty.
No. They could give a rats you know what about Pakistan.
Okay, but sovereignty in general. Is
not from a country like Pakistan where they were harboring a terrorist. and if George W. Bush had been in office, it would have been like, who cares?
So are you saying that someone dropped some dope into their Kool-Aid or something?
No, it's part of the game, because the Dems do it too.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll finish up that discussion. If anyone listening wants to call in and join the discussion, you can do that at 1-888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008, and we'll be right back on The Political Fix. Welcome back to The Political Fix. I'm Heather Vail, here with my co-hosts Jay Amernick and Rick Raddatz. If you want to join in our discussion, give us a call at 1-888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And if you're listening in on the radio...
Both of our listeners to call in. I want both of them to call in.
Yes, Rick's mom... Call in, please.
The webcast guy and the telephone girl. I want you both to call in.
Oh, yeah, Rick's using the phone, so much for that. Anyway, so the number again, 888-627-6008. And if you're listening on the radio and you want to see us on video, you can see the behind-the-scenes video, including all our commercial break banter, if you go to politicalfixradio.com. Yeah. All right, guys. So we were talking about whether or not Republicans were upset about Pakistan's borders being violated when Osama bin Laden was killed. Did we finish that? Anyone want anything to add to that?
No, I think that was kind of a nit point. Jay's larger point was that, you know, both sides play games. I agree with that, and so my recommendation is just, you know, let's ignore that and focus on the long-term solution, which is the cap and prioritize spending.
Okay. Now, how do you convince both sides that that is the solution when neither one of them apparently want to agree with the other, according to Jay's segment?
Yeah, well, let's go through cap and prioritize twice, one from the left perspective, one from the right perspective. If you're on the political right and you want a limited government for whatever reasons, freedom or personal responsibility or just, you know, common sense, okay? Well, people have the right to vote. So people are going to use that power to vote themselves money, and they're going to use that power to vote to help other people that they care about. Okay, that's going to happen no matter what. And so in that kind of society, a democratic society, where people have the right to vote, the only way that limits on government can ever be politically viable and sustainable over generations is if we allow what's left of government to be focused on helping people who need help most, so that they can have a reason to believe that they'll still get help within those limits, and that's where cap and prioritize comes in. In other words, the prioritize part of our proposal makes the cap part politically viable and sustainable. Without it, a cap is not viable, never has been, never will be. Okay, but cap and prioritize working together, the people who are more moderate, people who are even on the far left, can see how within the cap, the people who they care about most are going to get helped, maybe even themselves, and they can support it, okay? And you don't need 100% support. You need, like, 55% over generations, okay? If you have that, it'll stick. So now on the political left, okay, it's a different message because you want to help people better than any other idea ever, right? And you really want to help people through government action. And so my question is, look, even without a cap, we can't spend much more, because there's a point at which we lose competitiveness with the rest of the world, jobs go overseas, we hurt our economy. I mean, we're kind of there right now where we just can't politically or even financially spend more money. It's got to be at some point about spending better. Okay, how do we spend better within whatever limits we have? And the answer clearly is to prioritize. I mean, that's the only way to spend better is to think about what you're spending and drop off the lowest priority stuff and you know, have more money to fund the better stuff. And so, clearly, the pursuit of helping people, you know, social justice through government action is about prioritizing. But think about it this way. If all you do is prioritize, you're not making any progress. You got to prioritize and do the next step, which is to cut off the greediest and foolish spending. You got to have that cliff. Otherwise, things won't improve. Okay. So you need to cap and prioritize in order to force the government to have ideas compete and have only the best ideas win. So the cap is not optional, and neither is the prioritizing. You need both, but for different reasons.
Okay. Jay, do you think that that will solve the issue that you're talking about in your inside perspective?
Okay. So, I mean, what I gave you was sort of what you see on the outside. On the inside, actually, many, many people do work. Now, there's an influx on both the right and the left of the sort of, I'm going to call them the amateurs, who actually believe this, and then they get into that room and they don't hang that public persona up. And that's on the right, that's your Michelle Bachmann's. On the left, that's your Elizabeth Warren's. And guys like Rand Paul and people like that. So once those people get marginalized, everything Rick is talking about will fall into place. And vice versa, that they will become marginalized the more this makes sense. And they just become this sort of, you know, ranting lunatic out in the wilderness. Because everything's working, you know. So, you know, Elizabeth Warren can decry, you know, the businessman all she wants. Michelle Bachmann can, you know, decry the, you know, you know, any kind of government program all she wants. But if stuff starts working and everybody's seeing that it's working, they're just out in the wilderness shouting to each other alone.
Okay. Are you saying that there's a politician saying that business is not good? Was that what I got from that?
Elizabeth Warren constantly comments on the economy and how businesses work, and she has no it'd be literally like me talking about Malaysian history. I know nothing about it. but she really has no idea of how an economy works. But she says things that sound good, much like, you know, William Jennings Bryan did at the, you know, beginning of the last century, you know, saying nobody's made $1 million honestly and all this nonsense. And people like it, you know. She plays into that divide and conquer, as does you know, Michelle Bachmann on the yeah. Right.
Although Michelle Bachmann actually is one of two politicians who have told me directly that they like the cap and prioritize idea.
Really?
So you probably picked the wrong example there.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Substitute Ron Paul for Michelle Bachmann.
Yeah, I was at a kind of a private thing and Michelle Bachmann was speaking, and she was taking questions, and I asked the question about, hey, you know, don't we have to do this and then this, and I was talking about cap and prioritize, and kind of answered the question. I could see that she kind of came to understand what I was really saying as she was responding. But then like 4 or 5 minutes later, someone else asked her some other question about spending, and she says, well, you know, I like that cap and prioritize idea. It didn't go anywhere
right.
from that.
Okay, I substitute.
You picked the one wrong example. So it's not about you know, any kind of quick fix here. We've got to have these conversations, and you know, it's going to take longer than we think, but it'll happen.
Okay, it'll happen.
It'll happen.
Yes. Yeah, mainly because it sort of has to. It's sort of do or die, because something's got to give, because we cannot continue on this path.
Another way that this happens is that the political right, because of whatever dynamics, finally has enough power to put in some kind of limit on government. And then with government more clearly limited, what more can government do than prioritize? So just doing the cap kind of implies the prioritize, although – you know, there's better and worse ways to do the prioritizing that kind of builds more political consensus. So, you know, one way or another, this is going to happen. It's just a question of time.
Okay. Jay, I'm going to direct this to you since you have a background working in Hollywood. How do you think that media and the movies could help change people's perspective on things like what you were just mentioning about rich people, no one's ever made $1 million honestly, and that the people on the left that hate business say rich people are greedy and all that kind of stuff. I mean, we see that meme in movies a lot.
Yeah.
Rich people are greedy, rich people are evil. So what changes?
Which I find shocking considering most of the people that make these movies are multimillionaires. And some of them are incredibly delightful, and some of them are the most horrible human beings I've ever met in my life. I've seen the way they treat other people.
But they happen to know that 99% of the population is not millionaires, and they're making movies for those people. I just don't think that they need to be so hard on the divide and conquer meme.
It's, you know, again, part of it is there's, you know, there is a I would say, you know, when people say liberal Hollywood, they're actually quite correct. There is, you know, the heads of studios, everything like that. They do play into this notion of sort of a liberal narrative when it comes to making movies.
Yeah, yeah. The hero's always the underdog.
Right.
Well, you know, the villain has to be kind of greedy just because they're the villain. I mean, if you're going to have a good guy and a bad guy, you know, the bad guy is going to be a little greedy. I don't have a problem with movies doing that. There's no way for them to have the drama sometimes without someone being greedy, and the fact that they might be in business, you know, that's going to happen. But in terms of actually solving our country's problems, we have to do a better job getting the word out that there's five forms of greed, because individuals can be greedy, okay, wherever they are, but we as a nation, we can be collectively greedy and take more from us than we should do wisely. Politicians can be greedy, you know, people who control our collective government. Foreign nations can be greedy. And also, we as a species can be greedy versus what we leave for the future. So those are five different types of greed: individual greed, collective greed, political greed, foreign greed, and future greed, or species greed. And it just so happens that it's easier to make a movie about individuals being greedy or that foreign nation being greedy than it is about, you know, we, the species, or we as a collective. Political greed is also a good movie, and so Hollywood does do a good number of politically greedy films. Almost always, it's the political right person who is the greedy bastard. Right. Often, kind of, in a token way, depends on the movie. But there's no way around the fact that good movies have greedy villains. So I don't think that's going to change anytime soon. We just have to solve our own problems separately.
Well, I think it's the way the greed is executed, right? So, you know, there's good greed, there's bad greed. You know, the bad guys, their greed is always at the expense of someone else.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be that way.
Right.
You know, it's like any one individual can decide what they want to do with their lives. Okay, and so that's about morality and ethics, okay? But when it comes to designing a government, we need to assume that individuals will be all over the bell curve, okay? And at different times in their lives, every decision might be greedy or not, or a combination. And so when we're designing our government, we have to build in protection against greedy individuals. But we also have to build in protection against greedy governments. And so when you say there's good greed and bad greed, I'm going to say, no, really, greed just exists. It's neither good nor bad. It's just a fact of life. And what's good or bad is how well we've designed our government to handle it. If we created good incentives, like in capitalism, where people are encouraged to help others to get what they want, that's a good incentive. That's encouraging otherwise greedy people, potential criminals even, to help out instead of just take. So that's a good incentive for the greedy reality. So I say greed came first, and capitalism is what we get when we stop the worst of the greedy, the criminally greedy, and we let people just be kind of who they are, which is, you know, kind of generous but also kind of selfish.
Okay, cool. So let's take a final break, and when we come back, we're going to hear Rick's rant. We'll be right back on The Political Fix. Welcome back to The Political Fix. I'm Heather Vale, here with Jay Amernick and Rick Raddatz. And it's that time. It's the time that everybody waits for. We're going to hear Rick not just discuss, we're going to hear Rick rant. This is our outside perspective as opposed to Jay's earlier inside perspective. Take it away with Rick's rant.
Okay, today in Rick's rant, we are going to pin the greed on the donkey. Okay?
Cool.
Pin the greed on the donkey. Because the Democrats, the political left, the donkey party, the Democrats, right? They always rally about how these greedy capitalists, the greedy Republicans, and so on are doing X, Y, or Z. But here's the deal. When you vote for a government that doesn't set limits on itself, you're being greedy. You're being greedy. You're being greedy in the voting booth, okay? And it all comes from there. And so I don't know how to – I mean, we've already discussed what the message is here for cap and prioritize for the political left. And the message is that you can't spend any more. You got to start spending better. And that means setting some limits, capping, and then prioritizing so the people who need help most get the help they need. And so my challenge to everyone on the political left is to really think about that. Think about what it means to spend better as opposed to spending more. Because, darn it, you might not have greedy intentions when you vote for more spending or for the political left in general, but in But by voting that way, you are supporting more spending, not better spending. I'm not saying the right's any better. What I'm saying is we have to ignore the whole left-right battle and move to this cap and prioritize model where both parties get what they want. Okay, both parties are guilty of greed in their own way. Okay, but especially on the political left, you got to start thinking about spending better, not spending more.
Okay. What do you think, Jay?
I'm reminded there's actually a song by the Smiths. I can't remember what it is, but the Morrissey has the lines, the poor and the needy are selfish and greedy. And it's sort of going off his point. I'm not saying that, you know, I'm saying that, but if you tell somebody you're going to give them something for free, obviously they're going to vote for you. And the person who taken from is going to be not voting for you.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So yes, Rick is correct to get past this left-right thing because it's damaging to the actual discussion at hand. No, you know, nobody's looking at the fact that at some point in time the bottom's going to get knocked out of it. I think it was Margaret Thatcher that said the problem with socialism is pretty soon you run out of other people's money. And we do have a limited amount of money. You know, yes, we can keep printing it. The more we print, the less it's worth. I have a picture of I think it's like a $10 trillion note from Zimbabwe or something, and it won't even buy you a cup of coffee because they just printed and printed and printed until their money was literally worthless.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So I keep getting reminded, you know, during the break, our producer Doug was talking about back in the day when castles would take money from the farmers. And, you know, what you just said, Jay, about the poor and needy being greedy, wanting a free handout. I just keep getting reminded of Robin Hood, you know, stealing from the rich, giving to the poor. And
at a very different time when, you know, there was no...
Well, wait. Let's be clear about the Robin Hood story.
Okay.
The Robin Hood story.
He wasn't really Ayn Rand, Fox, right?
No, only in Disney.
Okay.
Ayn Rand was wrong about so many things, but she was right about the Robin Hood story. Robin Hood is not about robbing from the rich and giving to the poor. Robin Hood is about stopping the greedy government from stealing from entrepreneurs, merchants. And instead, giving that money back to the merchants, okay, back to the people who were producing the money. So that's what Robin Hood was about. Now it just happened that the government ended up being rich because it sold so well, and the merchants were poor because the government took all their money. But the Robin Hood story is not about social justice; it's about economic justice, and people don't get that. Now where Ayn Rand was wrong, okay, is that, you know, she takes that story and concludes that government, therefore, is totally corrupt, totally evil, and must be minimized, and that's just the wrong, you know, that's one side of the story. There is a role for government to play, but in the ideal situation, it would be a flat tax where we all pay a small amount of money, 10%, whatever, and that goes into this common fund that then gets prioritized, and we help the people who need help most with the ideas that help them the most. And that would be a way that we can all make sure that people have as equal an opportunity as we can make it. It'll never be perfect, but that is the government's proper pursuit of social justice, and Ayn Rand would deny that. Now, to her credit, she wouldn't just cut people off. She agreed that we need a transition plan, but her transition plan was to a transition where government had no role to play anymore in that. And I'm saying that that's too aggressive. Government does have that role. And under a flat tax, by the way, if we all vote to raise that tax, then we're all, what an economist would say is that we're all taking into account the opportunity cost. You know, what else could we do with our money? And we're all voting to help people more. That would be even a Milton Friedman compatible way of pursuing social justice within government, because we're all, you know, we're all paying the extra to help each other.
Yeah, okay. So is it even realistic? I know that there's a lot of people who like to talk about taking government out of the picture and reducing government's role. But, you know, when it gets to a certain point, it almost seems like that's when anarchy sets in. So is it even realistic to have that conversation to the extent that it goes on?
No, it's a knee-jerk reaction because people get this idea that, we don't need regulation, we don't need this, we don't need that. We do to an extent. Now, we don't, there's moderation. It's one of the things we talk about a lot on this show. The right says get rid of all regulation. Well, that's nonsense because you do that and things go wild. But the left says, put more regulation on. You do that, the government is so tied down, it can't do any business. So there's a moderate in there that keeps people safe and keeps safe products out there, and that allows the business to continue.
One of the mistakes that people on the far right and far left both make is they imagine some ideal government and say, look how ideal this could be. Look how wonderful this could be if only we did X and Y and Z fully, okay? If only we fully shared with everybody, like communism, or if only we fully respected each other as rights, like with anarcho capitalism. But think about it this way. In the ideal society, well, that can only happen if everyone's acting ideally, okay? Meaning, if everyone behaved perfectly, yeah, then we could have a very small government, and we'd all share. But that's nowhere close to what reality is. And so given how messed up reality is right now, the question is, what kind of government do we need right now? A second question then is, given where we are now, what can lead us towards that ideal where we're all totally free and we're all sharing with each other? Well, one step closer is a slightly more limited government, okay, trending towards maximum freedom. And then within those limits, prioritizing so well that the people who need help most are getting the help they need, and so we're helping them best. Now, if you take that out a couple hundred years, you can get to a point where government is such a small percentage of our economy, and we're so good at helping each other that government becomes kind of like a charity. Then we could voluntarily fund government and yet still help everybody. And so that is maybe over time a path towards the ideal, but of course reality is going to stop that from ever really happening. But we can still march towards the ideal. Let's not jump to the ideal.
Right. Okay. Well, this has been a great show today, guys. We're out of time, unfortunately. Anyone listening, if you want to catch up on what we've been doing, go to politicalfixradio.com. You can see our archives, both video and audio. And we'll be back with you next week. Same time, same channel, on The Political Fix.
Thank you for listening to The Political Fix, the show that investigates a political solution combining the best of the left and the right. On behalf of Rick Raddatz, Jay Amernick, and myself, Heather Vale Goss, we're glad you chose to get your fix with us. We need reform to fix this country, and incentive reform is what will make a difference. The five economies and resources laid out in Pentonomics and the strategies we call cap and prioritize are the focus of Rick's vision of the optimal political future. Every week we talk about the answers we've dug up among ourselves and with political experts who have the ability to make change happen. Get on board and get your fix. Streaming live Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, at politicalfixradio.com.